Good morning and welcome to today's oil market update with Callum McPherson. How are you doing today, Callum?
Very well, yourself?
Yeah, really good, thank you. So this week we're going to talk through the 2021 oil hedging considerations pieces, which your team issued at the end of last week. 2021 is a very uncertain year, and you've highlighted that the key issue to begin with is the rollout of the virus versus the vaccines.
Yes, thanks, Toby. I think the experience of the UK with the variant we've had here is actually quite instructive, both in terms of that particular strain specifically, but also about dealing with new strains generally, because it was first detected in the autumn through DNA sequencing, so it was identified that there had been a mutation, but it wasn't until the strain had spread quite a bit that there was enough data to work out what, if anything, was different about this. You know, what was the implication of it being of the mutation? And of course, what was then became apparent. What was that the virus was spreading much more rapidly. So that's the first thing, that you have this delayed thing between first detecting that there is something new and secondly, what does that actually mean in terms of the transmissibility and how dangerous the virus is? The other thing then about this strain particularly is that it starts small and of course grows. I mean, this is always the case. So we've seen perhaps a month ago we were a few weeks ago we were hearing reports of this new variant being detected on the continent, continental Europe, so a couple of few cases here and there, but of course that is now starting to develop into this strain becoming more prevalent, just as it did in the UK, and this is a real worry. So it's become present in continental Europe. In the US, in Asia, even China, there have been some cases. And on the other hand, we have the vaccines coming out. And in some cases, there have been some very impressive, Israel particularly has managed to vaccinate a quarter of its population. Absolutely extraordinary. But that is a bit of an isolated case. I mean, in the UK, we've got about 5% vaccinations, I think, and continental Europe mostly behind that. So the rollout of the vaccine, although impressive in a lot of ways, it's also quite slow compared to the spread of this new strain. So there's clearly a window of risk over the next few months that we could have this resurgence in the virus through this new strain, that the new vaccines cannot combat quickly enough, and that raises concerns I think over demand over the next couple of months.
But because of the uncertainty in this, you've looked at a number of scenarios for supply demand and what this would do to global inventories.
Yes, well, I think because it's so uncertain, as you say, we really have to look at scenarios. So what, you know, if this happens, what does that mean, et cetera, et cetera. And we've used the EIA, the US Energy Information Administration data and forecasts as a base case. And we've then applied adjustments to that to see what that might mean under those particular scenarios. And something we're particularly keen to look at is the impact of the OPEC Plus agreement and the extra million barrels per day that the Saudis decided to go on top of that. And what we see actually is if we overlay that OPEC action over the EIA's other forecasts, the cuts look to be too deep. They show that OECD inventories, which we know OPEC look at as a measure of global inventories, and it's something that they have talked about particular targets and the 5-year average and this kind of thing. And what we find is that the measures that OPEC announced the other week will probably go too deep for what relative to the EIA's forecast. But another way of looking at that is to say that perhaps that's because OPEC is prepared for a softening in demand over the next couple of months. So just as we've been talking about a moment ago, and the spread of this new strain and the danger that creates for demand, my interpretation of OPEC's actions then is that they're preparing the market for that this softer period. And consequently, again, based on using these base forecasts, that suggests OPEC will need to increase output quite significantly later in the year. But if we apply an even more significant demand shock to the next couple of months, indeed one that also includes Chinese demand falling, then actually the OPEC cuts would still allow a significant rebuild in inventories, so it's a reversal of the decline in inventories we saw into the end of last year. So that would be quite a shock to the market. But actually, even with that, the OPEC cuts do look to be enough to contain the situation. I mean, obviously, they wouldn't then be able to increase production quite so dramatically later in the year. But nevertheless, that probably is enough to contain the situation. So I think it's a sort of overall. And another scenario again that we also looked at is, well, what if actually demand increases? You know, whatever happens over the next couple of months, what happens if demand does increase sharply later in the year? So we looked at a situation where from May onwards, demand is actually back to 2019 levels, and there we see the need for a strong increase in OPEC production later in the year. So a lot of different moving parts there, but I think that's probably the main message is that is that the market is, because of the actions OPEC have taken, the market is prepared from a supply-demand point of view for a softer outcome over the next couple of months. But I think whether that the market sentiment is prepared for that sort of softer than expected demand is perhaps another matter.
Okay, and if demand does prove to be relatively robust and prices move higher, will we see more non-OPEC production?
Well, of course, here we get back to the perennial question of for OPEC about how to deal with particularly US shale. The market is now above 50, quite meaningfully so. Is that going to rekindle shale outputs and undermine what OPEC are trying to do? Well, I think it's worth noting that, again, focusing on US shale, that production into the end of last year was maintained to quite a large extent by bringing previously drilled wells that have not yet been put into production. So basically, because the well has been drilled, that the cost has mostly already been taken. And so it's a matter of putting that well into operation. So that's one thing. But of course, to maintain shale production in the long term, you need to keep drilling completely fresh wells because output from shale wells declines relatively quickly. So you need to keep drilling, and that is expensive. And what we need to see really is the somewhat higher prices stimulating fresh drilling, and that hasn't happened so far. It's also interesting to look at, as we have, cash generation by independent US producers, and that continues to be pretty challenging. I mean, frankly, that was challenging before COVID, so it's not necessarily anything new. But perhaps it's something that investors are more wary of when they're considering giving more cash to independent US producers. And then on top of that, we've also got the Biden presidency, which starts this week. And significantly, he has control now of both houses in the States. So he should be able to bring about meaningful change. I mean, certainly he talked a lot about this in the lead up to the to the election. So now he has the mandate and the power to deliver on those. And certainly it's going to be a much less conducive environment for oil producers in the US than it was under Trump.
Okay, and are there any other risks to the supply?
Well, the Middle East has been fairly quiet, really, over the last year, I'd say, or perhaps we've been too preoccupied with the virus to notice what's been going on. But looking forward, though, I mean, one other thing that the Biden presidency brings about is the possibility of restoring the old nuclear deal. And certainly he's talked a lot about doing that. But I think that may not happen very quickly in practice. So it's definitely something to look at. And certainly Iranian production coming back onto world markets, I mean, that might add 2 million barrels per day of additional production. So it's a significant issue for the market if it did happen. But I think it will take time. So one to watch. We may also mention quickly Libya, because the Libyan production has ramped back up again to over a million barrels per day. The main risk now for Libya is actually that production goes offline again for some reason. So that's now an upside risk to prices rather than a downside risk.
All right. And finally, can we now look at the price developments over the crisis recently compared to the longer term? What does this tell us about the prospects for the year?
Well, I think on the downside, just looking at some of the technical levels and indicators, we've got the uptrend from November, which is so far providing support in the mid-50 area, which, of course, is where the market is at the moment. So we're close to that support level. I think also that Brent has rallied over $50 per barrel. That $50 per barrel area is now another important support level. And then below that, we've got the moving averages. We've got the 200 days around 41, the 100 days around 45, and the 50 days around 48. So those are support levels as well. And finally, we've got the trend line support from the lows of April and November last year, and that comes into around $43 per barrel. So, if, you know, touching back on the idea of demand being a bit softer over the next couple of months, and perhaps market sentiment not really being ready for that, these are the kinds of levels we would look to for support if the market did come off. So, if Brent were to fall back through 50, then you've got these levels like 48, 45 and 41 to look out for support on the downside. If there was a more significant shock, I think particularly in China, if this signs of new variants were starting to really spread in China and there was a demand impact there, I think there's every chance we could see the market moving below 40, but you know, let's see. Then on the upside, obviously, we've had recent highs around 56, 57, which are around the lows of mid 2019. So that's a resistance area. If it can break through there, we've got $60 per barrel of the figure, which is an important sort of psychological level. And then we've got a long-term resistance line from the high of 2018 and the high just before the COVID crisis. And this currently limits Brent in the sort of in the $60 per barrel area. So I think if we were to see a breakthrough 60, it does seem quite a big number at this stage. But if we did see that, then there's a potential to move back into the $60 to $80 per barrel range even.
Brilliant. Thank you for the update, Callum.
Thanks very much, Toby.